Good afternoon and good morning and good evening to those of you in the UK and Europe. My name is Paul Weber, and I would like to welcome you to the teleclass lecture, Using Social Marketing to Improve Healthcare Quality. Now, I have known Jason Tetreault for the better part of two decades. For much of that time, he has worked in research with Professor Syed Sattar's Center for Research in Environmental Microbiology at the University of Ottawa in Canada. He's also an author with a new book titled The Germ Code, How to Stop Worrying and Love the Microbes. He's a frequent commentator on radio and television, and he's sometimes referred to as a germ evangelist or even a germs relationship therapist. This is Jason's third teleclass lecture, and I'm really pleased that he's able to join us again to present Using Social Marketing to Improve Healthcare Quality. I give you the one and only Jason Tetreault. JT, over to you.
All right. Thank you, Paul. And hello there, everyone. Thank you for taking the time to attend this teleclass and to continue the support of Paul's unbelievable adventures in improving healthcare quality everywhere in the world. For some of you, the term social marketing might seem to be a little bit novel or maybe even strange. And for the most part in healthcare, it actually has been. But if you go to the next slide, you'll actually see that back about 10 years ago, that's about 8 years ago, it was first brought up into the healthcare world, especially in infection control. And it was essentially a way of introducing how can we take something that has been used for decades to, you know, sell products, you know the brand names, the Cokes, the Walmarts, everything like that. Well, they use their marketing technologies to, you know, improve their sales. Well, can we do something like that in the healthcare field? And if you go to the next slide, you'll see that social marketing itself is actually a way of marketing not necessarily a product, but an idea. And this was actually termed back in 1971 by Philip Kotler and Gerald Saltman. And it was based on a question that was asked by a guy named Weeb back in 1952. Why can't you sell an idea the same way you sell a product? And what I've done here is essentially, why can't you sell hand hygiene like you do soap? And over those years, from 1952 to 1971, they realized that there would need to be a shift in mentality of marketing so that you're not really selling the good, you're selling the idea. And it wasn't really about profit in terms of money, it was profit in terms of adoption, compliance, social behavior change, which would then lead to potentially choosing products that would then lead to profit. Let's go to the next slide. That in itself has already manifested in infection control and also in healthcare quality, but in a different way. If you actually look at today's situation in healthcare, we really are focusing on social behavior change to try and improve healthcare quality. And at the most recent APIC meeting where I was at, that actually took up quite a bit of lecture space. It was very interesting because in as much as they were trying to come up with an idea for, you know, SBC, social behavior change, they never really focused on the topic that actually brings it about, which is social marketing. They all were talking about it in the periphery, but they never actually went to the core. And so what I thought was, let's go to that core. Let's talk about social marketing. And how can we actually do social marketing so that we can improve healthcare quality? So if you go to the next slide, the goals of social marketing initially were very simple. You want to force motivation, get people to do things by providing messaging. You want to direct those individuals to follow the messaging, but you also don't want to, you know, expend a great deal of energy or cost. You know, this is something that should be done naturally. You don't want to be spending $250,000 on a campaign for a Super Bowl commercial, but what you do want to do is you maybe want to spend $250 to try and find a way to make a message interesting. You want to adopt a mechanism by which a message can then be translated into action, so that that message is no longer something that people hear and repeat over and over again, much like the slogans of many commercials, but instead it turns into the core of the action that's done. And when people ask, well, why did you do that? That's the message. And finally, you want to reduce the distance between the action that people are doing and the associated product. In other words, it comes full circle. By doing the action, you're actually manifesting the message so that it can be shared even further. So on the next slide, I sort of break that down. Why can't you sell hand hygiene like you do soap? Excuse me. Well, if you look at force motivation, selling soap, very simple. It makes you clean. For selling hand hygiene, it's actually to stay clean. To direct the individual, you give them the lather, rinse, and you go with our soap. For selling hand hygiene, the message is 15 seconds of hand washing actually means safety. When you translate that, a clean body means happiness, and I'm sure you've probably seen some soap commercial where they, you know, talk about how wonderful clean you'll be and that improves your life. Well, when it's selling hand hygiene, you want to share that life. You want to share that happiness with other people as opposed to illnesses or dirt. And finally, reducing the distance. Well, with any product available at stores everywhere, I mean, that's just the easy way to reduce the distance. But for a message, it's basically, well, how much energy do I have to put into that message? And a few seconds is really all you need. So that's the fundamental difference between the two. Now, if you go to the next slide, modeling social marketing actually went through numerous steps from 1971 to the 1980s, and they tried numerous different theories and practices, including knowledge translation, which a lot of people have heard about. But that was just too academic. There was no real way to convey action to a mass population through a process of knowledge translation. Experiential communication, i.e., hey, I wash my hands, you should too, it didn't work because it was too limited in the sense that people just could not actually talk to other people outside of their realm. It was always, you know, the friendship. Positive deviance, something we all hear about in infection control, it's too demanding. The expenditure of energy is far too great, and what ends up happening is that people end up falling out of that simply because it's taking too much. The actual most effective way to do social marketing was actually community-centric, where society was the overarching goal. Individual was actually part of society, and then by adaptation of the message into an individual's life, you change society. Also, you don't assimilate. You do not say, you have to do this, but instead you say, doing this is actually improving all of our lives. And that led to what's called the four P's, and I have that on the next slide. And essentially it was product or goal, which is, you know, what is our expected outcome? We want people to have less infection. Place, well, where should the action take place? For infection control, obviously, healthcare facilities. For people in food safety, you want that to be in the food establishments and also restaurants. At the home, well, you want to keep your family safe. So you want to try and identify ways to put the place with the message. Promotion, how do you promote it effectively? We've all seen different ways that promotion has been done, and it's come with varying levels of success. And price is essentially going back to that, you know, how much you are expending out, both cost and also energy, and what is, what I'm going to say, the return on investment for that particular implementation. Now, while the four P's may work in a quasi-corporate sense. In other words, let's just say that you have a margarine that wants to promote heart health. Well, all of this works. But what if you're trying to use the message to convey a social behavior change solely without having to focus on a particular product? And if you go to the next slide, you'll see that there are problems. So when you're looking at the product or the goal, which is hand hygiene compliance in infection control, healthcare professionals, but what about the housekeeping staff? What about the patients? What about visitors? We all know about community-introduced infections. The place, well, we perform hand hygiene in the patient rooms, and of course we have the 5 moments, according to the WHO. I mean, it works really, really well. But what about the foyer? What about the waiting rooms? What about the cafeteria? Promotion. You want to increase compliance. And none has been better than Didier Pitet and his Clean Hands Save Lives. Unbelievable. But does that incorporate the psychological? Does that incorporate the emotional? Does it incorporate trust? Because you may say Clean Hands Save Lives, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're actually going to have a person washing their hands or using hand sanitizer and saying outrightly, clean hands save lives. And then price. Well, in this particular case, we really want lower infections to cost savings. But there's other factors to take into effect, which are increased time, flow of consultation. What about the fact, antibiotic resistance? The WHO has now called this a major emergency. And we also know that you can actually prevent antibiotic resistance from spreading through using hand hygiene. But does that get incorporated into the four P's? Not really. So on the next slide, you'll see that there had to be a shift in direction. It couldn't be about the central product. It had to be about the central message. And unfortunately, this is where the madman advertising style no longer applies. There had to be a different way to convey a message without having to constantly go back to a product at the end of the 30-second commercial. And that was tested for numerous different theories, and eventually they found one. And it was Jan Semenza at the European CDC, who I met several years ago, who actually showed an incredible marketing, social marketing campaign that didn't focus on a product, but focused on the people. Now, on the next slide, you'll see a nice picture of a sunflower that happens to be sitting in the middle of an intersection. This is actually at the intersection of 33rd and South Yamal in Portland, Oregon. And for those of you who happen to be in Portland, I invite you to go take a look. And he published a paper called The Intersection of Urban Planning, Art, and Public Health. And this was the Sunnyside Piazza. So they went to a low-resource area in Portland, Oregon, and they wanted to try and find a way to increase health. The way they were going to do that was through health promotion. But instead of flyers, instead of lectures, they decided to actually integrate the community by making everybody an ambassador. And the way that they introduce people as ambassadors is by making them a part of this painted sunflower. So the entire community got together and they made this painted sunflower. By the way, if you actually want to go and see the sunflower and you're not in Portland, Google Earth or Google Maps, and if you go to 33rd and South Yamhill, boom, you'll see it right there. Absolutely amazing. So what he found is on the next slide. If you looked at a control site, which is another low-resource environment, versus the test site, you actually saw a significant increase in the sense of community, health and well-being, interaction and team building, and more importantly, a commitment to sustainability. And the reason that that is important, especially when you're talking about something like hand hygiene, is that while you may have a campaign that may last 6 weeks or 6 months, afterwards, if you don't have the commitment of the people who were targeted to continue doing that or to continue living by the message, then your return on investment is going to be short-term, and then you're going to have to come up with something new. And the way humans work is you've tried one thing, now you've got to outbest that. You've got to do something even more outlandish or better or amazing. And sometimes you reach a threshold where it's either cost, administrative approval, or quite simply you just run out of ideas. So what were the lessons learned on the next slide? There were four major components. The education of individuals actually was pretty easy, because when they all were involved in this community action, you could share information and put it in such a way that it was easy to understand. And if people who weren't quite there, they could ask people who already understood, and they would share. It was amazing. You have enrichment, because you have that social interaction, and eventually it goes from being a public health stewardship to a community stewardship. You have engagement, because now what you've done is you've actually created a community that can now go out and engage others. And essentially that would lead to other low-resource neighborhoods seeing this and saying, hey, I want to do the same thing, and then eventually they would grow, and so it starts to grow outward. Imagine, if you will, a ward that starts to show amazing compliance. Well, other wards are probably going to want to know, how did that happen? And then the entertainment was through art, music. The whole idea of laughing, they found, was actually amazing. The more people laughed, the more they were actually receptive to the message and actually changing. And that's called social capital, social cohesion. And another term, which I don't have here, which is sort of being explored at the moment, which is actually called cultural capital. All of them increased. So on the next slide, those four P's eventually became the four E's: education, enrichment, engagement, and entertainment. Now, before I get into these, this is essentially where I am now teaching and providing lectures to groups and communities, not just in infection control, but in nutrition, probiotics, natural health, and even to some extent into health promotion and prevention. So these four E's actually apply in every situation, every scenario where you're trying to use a message to improve social behavior. So, education. First off, it is the easiest. I know something, I'm sharing with you what I know so that you know it. Very simple. It's also the most time-consuming, because if you're not right, then there can be a real significant problem. And let me just give you a very short example of that. We now sit in a time where people are getting extremely upset about the use of certain types of viruses in laboratories. And whenever people are talking about this, they use this canon idea that we'll have a leak that's going to lead to a pandemic. The problem is that they're all basing it on information that's incorrect. And if you actually go to the correct information, you'll actually see that that leak never actually happened. But what it did is it created a fear that led everybody to start working against the concept of research. And that still continues today. So if you don't work on very good and correct information, then you could be actually educating improperly or incorrect or inaccurate information that could really spread and turn into something you don't want. For the purposes of healthcare leadership and healthcare quality, the WHO, the CDC, Infection Control, APIC, they all have guidelines. And I invite you to PubMed. It is so easy now, and there's so many articles that are actually open access, so you don't need to be part of an educational institution. You can read, you can learn, and you can actually find ways to say, hey, I want other people to know this. Always stay positive. You want to try and give people information in a way that makes them interested in it. You know, don't pontificate, don't preach, don't patronize, don't punish. You know, you want to make sure that what you're saying is actually something they're going to want to hear. And you should be neutral with the facts. You know, don't try and put emphasis on some facts over another. You want to keep that neutral. The facts are the facts. But the tone is where you really have an opportunity to sort of engage, and we'll get to that in a minute, through education. And I apologize, it should be keep information fresh as opposed to the is. Grammatically, I messed up there. But as long as you keep information fresh, people are going to be interested in it. And an example is Hippocrates. He talked about travel-related infections back in 4th century BC. And today, we still talk about travel-related infections, but we do it in a very different way. That's why it continues to be something that is newsworthy. That's why it's something that continues to be something that people are listening to and are always interested in. For hand hygiene, it's the same thing. We've known about the effects of hand hygiene now for well over 100 years. But if we can actually do it in such a way that it's fresh, then people are really going to pay attention. And then eventually, you'll get that not only commitment, but sustainability to commitment. Enrichment. This one is actually the hardest to achieve. Because when you take a message, you want this message to somehow improve the life of the person who's listening to the message. And it's not a one-person affair. You do require various stakeholders. You do require an analysis of your message. And you do require someone who has some kind of social marketing experience to be able to say, well, I don't see that message having as much of an impact as maybe something else. And when I get into the case study, I'll explain a little bit more about that. You want to be inventive with what you're gaining out of it. One of the wonderful things that people talk about is you can boldly proclaim at the top of a soapbox something, and people will probably hear it but they'll hear it but they'll never listen. But if you come up to someone and you're like, hey, I got a secret for you. Yeah, did you know this? They'll always remember it. And if you do it in such a way that even if you're talking in front of a camera with 3.5 million people, it can actually be fascinating. And an example is when I'm talking about polio. I mean, we know polio has been around for decades. We know that there's a vaccine and we're on the verge of eradication. And yet, we're starting to see polio starting up again. When I'm asked about that, I don't talk about the bug, I don't talk about the practice, I don't talk about the vaccine. All I say is, polio is like a weed in the garden of our health. And I use that everywhere I go, and you would be surprised. Because people start to understand that the weed is something that we're all trying to get rid of, and we know how to get rid of it. We fertilize our gardens. We make sure that it's properly watered. We make sure that it's properly tilled. And yet, if we leave it alone and we just ignore it, or we do bad things to it so that it's war-torn, then that weed's going to come back. And next thing you know, you've got an inventive way of sharing how to use polio vaccination to improve the garden of our health. Give incentives to learn more. And this is actually a key thing that I learned from an old virology friend of mine, Earl Brown. He always said to me, when you're talking with someone, always hold the most critical piece of information to yourself. That way, whenever someone is talking with you, it's something that you can bring up that will fascinate them. Or if someone detracts from you and starts to argue with you, telling you you don't know what you're talking about, then you can bring that up, and the detractors, not surprisingly, will go away. So that way you enrich, your education is strong, your enrichment is actually even better. Engagement. Pretty easy. You just want to focus on the audience that you're talking to, and you want to somehow get your message across to them, right? Well, what if your audience happens to be a NASCAR fan, or an F1 fan for the Europeans? Or what if your target happens to be somebody who really likes music, rock music, rap music, whatever? Or what if it's someone who's a tech geek? If you're going to engage them, you have to find ways to talk to them such that they either all appreciate, or you do it targeted so that each individual group gets it. Now, something I did at APIC last month, we did a game show for hand hygiene. It was ironically called Are You Smarter Than the Germ Guy? And it worked like a charm. We had hundreds of people playing, and they all got into it, they all had fun, and they all took away one big message. Hand hygiene is bigger than they think. and they wanted to spread that word. It was amazing. Now, you can do other things. You can do interactions. You can do, you know, video series. You can even do social models like sporting events. The whole idea is to engage the people and make sure that the message is there. You can actually do giveaways for patients and visitors. I mean, giving them hand hygiene from the volunteer, hand sanitizer when, you know, someone comes in by a volunteer. But the volunteer has to be that, you know, upbeat and everything like that, or else, you know, it'll be just like being on the conference room floor as a company where people are just walking by. And then, of course, there's the more chance for involvement, the greater success you're going to have. So that is really how to engage, and if it doesn't work, be open to modification. You can actually change some aspects, because it's the message that is the key here, not how you're doing it. And the perfect example is there was a study done where they looked at whether a survey or a huddle, much like football, was good to improve compliance, and they found that the huddles were much better than the surveys. Well, they were both very engaging, and they both were quite fun because the surveys apparently were hilarious, but at the end of the day, it was the huddles that actually did it better, and that's where they focused. Entertainment. You have a few genres that you can play with. I just put here art, music, visual arts, but there's so many other areas where you can go, but as long as you come back to these ideas of, you know, artistic, visual, musical, there is some aspects of literary that works. And what you want to do is you want to try and find a link between your message and that. So hand hygiene music videos, they're everywhere. Some of them, absolutely fantastic. Some of them, it was kind of cool. But at the end of the day, it's still an entertaining way to get the message across. Variety show ideas, much like the game show that I did. Unbelievable. If you can include a social celebrity, somebody who is actually, you know, well-known, who is into it and wants to share, it works like a charm. And, of course, you can develop character models for people to assume. And I'm going to get into that when we get into our case study. The only thing about entertainment is don't let it take over from the message. Entertainment is like that first line in a book. It's a hook. And as Stephen King actually once said, that hook is the most important part to get them to pay attention to read the rest of the book. But it's one sentence in an entire book. Well, it's the same thing. Use the entertainment to get them interested, but then go back and start using the substance of the other three E's once you have them. Now, those are the four E's, and thanks to Ogilvy, which is a massive marketing organization, they have a fifth one. It's called the evangelist. And the perfect example would be Steve Jobs. And I've put a little bit of what he did here, but quite honestly, if you happen to know anything about computers, you will know that Steve Jobs essentially was the god of computers in the 20th century, leading into the 21st. He essentially brought Apple to an unbelievable place, and everybody literally could not get to a lineup fast enough to buy something. Amazing, and if we had evangelists, and I mean, I myself call myself a germ evangelist, so I sort of fall into this category, that's wonderful. The problem, if you go to the next slide after that, is that there are limitations to what an evangelist can do. You can raise awareness. You can, you know, change consumer choice, or you can change the way people do things. But you're always going to have to support the product. You always have to support the message in the core context of the message. So if the world changes and things change, you have to stick to that message until somebody changes the message so that you can then go and do something else. The brand has to always change, because as an evangelist, if you just talk about the first generation iPhone, well, people are going to be excited for 6 months, 8 months. Then they're going to go away and look to the next big thing. So as the evangelist, you're always waiting for the brand and the message to change so that you can then go out and, you know, use it. And the third one is that they're human. It's a hard one to talk about, but when Steve Jobs died, Apple sank. And they haven't really recovered from where they were. And just recently, they have actually adopted a truce with their biggest enemy, the IBMs, to create their own mega corporation. So Apple literally has gone completely against everything they stood for 30 years because of what happened when the evangelist went away. So there's a new version of the evangelist, which is called the enthusiast. And this is a person who does not represent the brand, but the message. The person is essentially, if I may repeat myself, personification of whatever that message is. In olden times, we would call this the unsung hero or heroine. And all they do is they go out and they spread through word of mouth what the message is. And the most recent example of that is the cyclist in Canada, Clara Hughes, has been working to help raise awareness for mental health. Well, she just rode her bicycle across Canada, and everywhere she went, she essentially acted as that enthusiast to share through word of mouth what awareness needs to be for mental health. And it has been unbelievable what she has done. But let's go back to, you know, a little bit more of the technical. According to the Harvard Business Review, you can see 52 to 388% an increase in value just through word of mouth. And they found when they actually started doing cost effectiveness and return on investment that it could be $15 savings for every dollar spent. So think about it. By having an enthusiast who basically talks the message, you're going from a potential number of expenditures with who knows return on investment to potentially upwards of, you know, 150% even more increase in value and potentially the cost savings to increase the profit. Now, on a monetary basis, that's great, but think about it from a human perspective. For every dollar, think every human who understands, learns the message, and all of a sudden you start to realize, my goodness, we really could use enthusiasts to geometrically expand the message. The other really nice thing is that an enthusiast is a personal brand. In other words, you don't have to be the one person. You know, if the people who took over, Tim Cook from Apple, took over from Steve Jobs, and he shaved his head and he actually grew a beard, he still wouldn't be Steve Jobs. And so that's the thing, is that each and every person is an individual, and we call that the personal brand. And the best part about it is that now you don't have to be the person to talk to the NASCAR fan, to the music fan, and to the sports fan, or to the geek, I should say. In fact, one person can represent each of those as an enthusiast, and all of a sudden, the message is being spread. And it works. It works. And then the human factor lost to evangelism is really, for those of you who remember the 1980s, where you had all of these televangelists who essentially would say stuff so that they could make money and then did completely opposite, as an enthusiast, you're essentially talking about things in your own language based on your own experiences and your own actions, or as we like to say, do as I say and do. So the next slide, which is to deliver the message as an enthusiast, shows that each person has a different approach. You are unique. Everybody is unique. Everybody is an individual, and that leaves unlimited options for sharing a message. The message itself is still the same, but the people who are sharing the message will actually translate it in completely different ways to make sure that everybody understands. The other thing that enthusiast does is that person will act as a mediator between the executive and the audience. And this is something that's very important. How many people had Steve Jobs' cell phone number? Probably, you know, maybe a couple hundred people, but not the people who are actually buying all of the Apple products. But they do have the phone number of the person who runs the Apple store. And that Apple store can act as that mediator. Well, as a nurse, as a kitchen staff member, as a porter, you can act as that enthusiast who can then relate back to the executive as to how things are going on. And that actually increases that social capital, and again, as I don't have here, but the cultural capital. So what are the necessities? First one is very simple. Know your message. Every enthusiast is going to have that common base. Once you know the message, then you go from there. And we use the 4-4 music principle. And for those of you who understand jazz, I think you get it. But for those of you who don't, it's very simple. It doesn't matter where you are on the 2, 3, and 4, just as long as you always come back to the 1. And that 1 is your message. Stay positive, like I said before. Negativity will kill a message. And don't blame, accuse, condescend, curse, or dismiss anybody. Everybody has a point. Everybody has a reason. And all you need to do is just stay positive as the enthusiast. It'll get through. And just be yourself. So on the next slide, the last thing I just want to bring up before we get to the case example is the value of two-way conversations. And this is really a major point when it comes to deciding between an evangelist and enthusiast. Evangelists preach. And admittedly, I'm a spokesperson for germs, and germs don't have a very good light, therefore I preach. Enthusiasts, they interact. They actually get down with everybody, and they just share. And they have such a great time doing it. You should always, however, be receptive to feedback. Because with feedback from what people are saying, you're going to be able to either modify how the message is delivered, or if the message really isn't getting across, how to somehow find a way to change that message. And that's, of course, done by listening. You want to engage in ambient light and not the spotlight. You know, you want to be an expert in the community, not a rock star. And this has actually been shown extremely well by a group known as the Nightingale Initiative for Global Health, NI. They focus on maternal and child health, the MDGs. And the way that they do it is sharing is caring. And every single nurse who has a cell phone is actually an enthusiast of the sharing is caring message. And what they do is they post photos to Facebook, to other social media environments, and they share their experiences so that everybody else can see it. And not just nurses, but anybody who happens to be knowledgeable of the NI group. It's incredible. And then what you can also do is ask questions to ensure that the message is conveyed. And this comes from discussion. You don't want to ask the person, so what was the message? This is not going to work. What you want to do is you want to continue discussions and make sure that the message, even if it's not literally said, is actually contained within what these people are sharing. And the best way to do that today is social media, but it can still be done through word of mouth and other indirect means such as videos, radio interviews, communicatives, etc., etc. All right, so that takes us to the case example, which is to increase hand hygiene compliance, reduce infections and cost. So, how do you take this concept of a goal and develop social marketing from it? Well, the first thing you do is you look at your 7 steps. And I'm going to go through these fairly quickly. And what I want you to do is sort of get a feel for them. And then if you have any questions or if you want to start looking at doing this in a more detailed way, you're going to be fully free to contact me. So the first step is to create the core message. Then you identify the enthusiast. You choose complementary options. You optimize the marketing rollout. You implement the message. You assess each step, and you audit. It's not a novel concept. It's pretty much what every company, every group does as they're developing some type of campaign. So let's just go straight into it. You want to create the core message with the 4 E's. Well, in terms of hand hygiene, we know that 15 seconds will prevent majority of infections. Enrichment, well, the CDC has actually shown that $40,000 per admission in the U.S. can be saved, and we can actually reduce the level of antibiotic use through hand hygiene alone. Engagement, well, is probably one of the most important ways to protect yourself and others against infection. So, you know, if you clean your hands, not only are you saving yourself from infection, you're saving grandma when you're visiting her at the healthcare facility. Not to mention, it also calms the soul. So there's one missing, the entertainment. So what I did is I went to a very well-known company in the United States called Geico. They are the Government Employee Insurance Corporation. And what they have done is they have systematically, using social marketing, come up with a message that is incredibly easy, and pretty much everybody in the States has actually seen this and probably knows it off by heart, to the point that they have a commercial where they actually say, go to the next slide, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your insurance costs. They have a commercial where they actually say that, and someone else goes, well, everybody knows that. That's how well these guys have done. So let's take a message from this, shall we? Based on what we know from the other three E's. And that is, on the next slide, 15 seconds could save you 50% or more on your infection costs. I gave this talk, a version of this talk, to a group here in Toronto in infection control, and it was amusing. As soon as I showed this slide, they all just sat there and went, oh, wow, that's brilliant. And literally, kind of, I couldn't go on for a few seconds because they all just couldn't believe that something so simple could actually be developed to convey such a message. So now we've got a message. Well, let's identify the enthusiasts. Of course, not everybody's going to want to be involved, but it is a vocation. So you want to make sure that the people who are going to come into this are actually going to be committed to it in the long term. You also want to make sure that you gather all the stakeholders. You know, it's not just the infection control group. It's administration, IPC, housekeeping, communications, human resources, patient safety advocates, members from the public, maybe people who are visiting those who are there for a long term. Media. Media is huge, and they do have an interest, and potentially corporate sponsors. I know that there are some hand hygiene companies out there that actually work together, and there's even POTS, which are which is part of a larger international organization where you actually have private companies that are sponsoring patient safety. And then you have the ability to allow each enthusiast to share how they would convey their brand. Is it stories? Is it analogies? Ideas for the future? So let the enthusiasts sort of come into this so that they can share and contribute. Develop the enthusiast personal brand. Well, in Geico, there's the three, as you probably saw. Well, there's Maxwell the Pig. And what he does is he tells people that there's easy access online to all your insurance needs. There's Caleb the Camel. He actually makes sure that workers in all different types of industries realize that they need insurance. And then there's Martin. Martin the British Gecko. And he essentially says everybody needs and can have insurance. And each of their messages go back to the 15%, or 15 minutes and 15%. But at the end of the day, their messages are actually taking off on their own. And Geico, at the end, sort of receives all the wonderful approvals and eventually the people who are committing to insurance. The last stage of the enthusiast is, what is your brand? You know, I'm called the germ guy most of the time. Well, think about it. The germ killer. Now, the germ killer is actually a term that's already taken, and that's by Didier Pipé. And, of course, he deserves that. He has done everything to make sure that he knows how to kill them germs. But that doesn't mean that you can't take that as well. I mean, the housekeeping staff, they're definitely germ killers. Healthcare workers, they're definitely germ killers. The infection investigator. Are you an infection preventionist, or are you an infection investigator? One of them is actually going to sound a heck of a lot more interesting than the other. The clean culinarian is a person who focuses on hand hygiene in the kitchen. And then, of course, you have the chief hand hygiene officer, which is someone in administration. There's another personal brand, although a little bit limited. My friend, the Honorable Carolyn Bennett, who was the Minister of State for Health here in Canada back in the 2000s, actually called herself the hand-washing minister. And it stuck. Even to this day on Parliament Hill, when you bring that up, everybody knows it was Carolyn. So it goes all the way from just an average individual who is working to, you know, clean the healthcare floor all the way up to the Minister of Health. Three, complementary options. Well, word of mouth is always going to be the best because you have 100% reach. But there are other ways that you can do this. Posters and signage, especially those that use human factors, they provide education and enrichment. They'll reach between 40 and 60%. Multimedia, that'll reach about 20 to 30%. Paraphernalia, well, that's going to be just like regular advertising. You'll be lucky to get 6 to 10%. So really, in a cost-effective manner, word of mouth and maybe some posters and signage is really as far as you want to go. But if you have the ability to expend more, then yes, you can start looking into multimedia and paraphernalia. But at the end of the day, your enthusiasts are really the people who are going to hammer home your social marketing. Optimize your rollout, number four. It's not a matter of, did you know? How many of you have seen posters that say, did you know? Well, what if the person knew? He's not going to pay attention. What you want to do is you want to get away from the advertising concept and actually incorporate stories. And you want to encourage stories from all of your brands, all of your personal brands, all of your enthusiasts, and also from the people who are sharing from the public. So many people comment on blog posts. Surely you can get them to help increase the positive nature of the message in your environment. All you have to do is ask, and people are happy to share. It can be difficult at times, absolutely, but at the end of the day, it's worth it. And then, as I say in my last point, blogs, Facebook, websites, you know, Twitter feeds, all of these things are new ideas in social media and social marketing that are working extremely well. And if you actually are on Twitter and you follow a hashtag called HCSM or HCSMCA, you'll actually meet some of the people who are completely devoted to improving healthcare quality through the use of social media. Number five, implement the message. Well, don't specifically choose a day. I mean, yes, we get the balloons, we get the ribbons, we get the scissors, yay. It's not going to matter. This is something that you want to develop over time. So you start with the greatest reach. You start with the enthusiasts. And then eventually you might bring in some signage and some posters, because then that way there's more information. And then if you are going to paraphernalia, and one of the beautiful things is quick readers or QR codes where people can click on them and they'll be taken to a website, you can do that. And then, of course, you can place information sheets in all the high traffic areas. The thing is that the first two steps are probably going to be all you need, and the next two really are going to be just to keep things bright and fresh. But if it works on the concept of keeping the message out there and getting it out there, then you don't need to worry about going to the next two. The goal is obviously a rollout that is seamless, because then it seems as if it's always been part of the culture. And then the acceptance and adoption will actually come quicker, and the ROI will actually be easy to audit. But before you do the audit, you need to assess each step. So you want to give each of those steps 3 to 6 weeks. How did the enthusiasts do? How are people paying attention to the posters? And you should be aiming for that close to 100% for word of mouth and 40 to 60% for posters and signage. And there's ways of being able to assess those. You also want to have people who are observing, monitoring the changes. So if they're not an actual enthusiast, maybe they can be somebody who's on the periphery, who's watching how this social marketing venture is going. And most companies have these types of people. Media corporations actually have these types of people. And all they do is they essentially, while they're doing their regular day job, they're just watching and seeing, how's that going? Well, how's that coming on us? Oh, wow, that's really working out. And then they can sort of report back at the next stage, which is audit. And then for hand hygiene, the concept of electronic monitoring is incredible, because in this particular way, you can actually go statistically into how hand hygiene is being done and whether or not there are any improvements as a result of the social marketing. That's why I've mentioned that here. Then you have auditing. And again, an audit is fairly straightforward. You want to see whether or not there's an increased involvement in hand hygiene. You want to see if there's a change in the relevant attitudes through the word of mouth. You want to see if there's you know, any memory, commitment to sustainability requires memory, of not the, necessarily the message itself, but how is the message being adopted, seen, conveyed, acted upon. And to do that, you want to actually do it in a fashionable way. So quizzes, games, challenges. There was a great talk at APIC about someone who does sort of a monthly who did better than whom challenge. And in as much as they all thought it was going to create competition in a negative sense, it actually created a very positive competition because everybody was doing quite well. And eventually, you know, they were missing each other by a couple points. And it turned into a really great game. And then eventually cost savings, you know. IPC data will provide association to secondary effect. Antimicrobial prescription rates can be a tertiary effect, but at the end of the day, you want to find out, am I saving or am I expending? And if you're expending, then the social marketing may need to change or shift, or maybe even the message itself. So the expected outcomes, increased knowledge of the message, increased memory of the value of hand hygiene, increased overall compliance, and of course, better cost efficiency, or efficacy, excuse me. And at the end of all of that, somebody with a big suit can get up there and say, we've improved healthcare quality. And that's really how it works. So, social marketing for healthcare quality. Hand hygiene, one example, and as Paul will tell you, I worked in hand hygiene for so long, and it was how I got my start in social marketing and also social media. So for me, it's one of the easiest. There are several other ways that social marketing can be done, and it has been done with great success, including tobacco cessation, alcohol abuse, prevention of STIs, and even heart disease. There's been a fantastic process to get women to focus on their heart health using social marketing, and it's been so successful. It may take time for acceptance and adoption. Even though it came out in 1971, you know, it wasn't in AGIC until 2006. And just this year at APIC, it was really being talked about, but it wasn't actually called social marketing. So this is really sort of the foundation, the base of what is to come. And by looking at this and seeing how this can actually make a change in your healthcare environment or your nutrition environment or your natural health environment or your sports environment or whatever environment, if you start now, then you're actually going to be able to continue it forward, and more importantly, you're actually going to be able to publish what you've done. There's the journal, you know, quarterly journal of social marketing. There's the journal of social marketing. Even AGIC would probably be interested in something that uses social marketing in order to actually help compliance. So a summary of social marketing is a relatively recent but very successful model. It focuses on the improvement of social behavior using the four E's. You have the human factor to ensure efficacy, which is the enthusiast. And unlike other means, word of mouth is really the primary delivery system because we know it's 100%. The other traditional methods are complementary. Posters, videos, papers, handouts, whatever. Those are not going to reach your audience. Having an enthusiast who has the message will. And that's really the way forward. So my final note before I end you here is that my own experience has been as sinusoidal as some electronic hand hygiene monitoring charts. I came up with the idea that we should be protecting ourselves from germs. That didn't go over so well. Eventually, over time, over talking with people, over doing my interviews, over being in international venues, I realized that the key message actually was, we need a better relationship with germs. Now, to the germ killer, that means that we get closer to the good germs, which make up the majority of all of them that are out there, but the bad ones that actually cause infection, we have to keep away. You don't want to go on the bad side of the tracks. Well, it's the same idea. You keep those bad ones away. As an enthusiast, in other words, when I'm not the germ evangelist, I'm the germ guy, I'm the germs relationship therapist, I actually now am called a germs pundit by many media organizations, because I basically get up in front of a camera and I punditry away on on germs and other issues. And then, of course, I'm also a microbiologist. I now have gotten to a point where I am a contributor to national, international media. I have columns in major news outlets. I do spokesperson duties for various companies. I'm hoping to be joining other groups and organizations. And I have that book that came out called The Germ Code, which I found out when I was actually at IPAC, that it is recommended reading for IPCs in the UK, which to me is such an amazing honor. At the end of the day, it creates an expansion of a very niche concept, a relationship with germs, a concept that most people would tend to just walk away from, into the mainstream. So if I can do that with something like a relationship with germs on my own, then each and every one of you out there can walk away from this lecture, and whether it be hand hygiene, whether it be VAPS, whether it be some other problem that is occurring in an infection control world, or maybe in a dietary world, or a health nutrition world, or whatever world you happen to be specializing in, you can also go out there and do it and be extremely successful, and also, and more importantly, make that social behavior change we've all been looking for and make it last. And with that, I thank you.
Jason, thank you very much. I see that on your last slide, you have your email address. I presume that means that it's okay for people to contact you, especially since you have contact me right there.
Well, yes. I would be more than happy to discuss more in depth. And as I said, I do actually go out and lecture this. And I'm hoping that in the near future, I'll be able to work with certain organizations to be going into various institutions so that we can share the social marketing wonders with the institution so that we can get them all to be enthusiasts. So please feel free to email me.
I think this certainly would work very well as a workshop. It's hard to absorb all this information in a teleclass, especially when your mind gets going on a certain idea and you miss a couple of slides. So for those of you who are listening, if you think you did miss something, the recording of this lecture will be posted on the website in the next 30 or 45 minutes or so. But I think it would be a fine idea to invite Jason to come and give a workshop at your facility and spend a little bit more time and get more in-depth into it. It's certainly an interesting
topic. And the slides will be much prettier, too. When you're doing a teleclass, as Paul has always told me, if I start putting all sorts of funny pictures and the diagrams and other things, he will hurt me. So I made this very, very simple for people to be able to just print out without using too much ink. Cost efficiency, people.
Thank you very much for that as well. Now, I will refer people to the second to last slide, slide number 44. There's just a brief list of some of the teleclasses that are coming up. The one next weekend is, next Thursday, rather, was sort of a late arrival. It was added just a couple of months ago. It's hand hygiene technologies. Are these interventions the missing link in hand hygiene compliance? That's speaking about the devices that monitor and encourage people to use their, primarily, I think, alcohol hand sanitizer. It's a very interesting topic, and I think it'd be very worthwhile. I would encourage you to register for that. There is a free teleclass in August on the Argentinian experience of infection prevention and control, South Pacific teleclass on diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of prosthetic joint infections, something that we have never had before on teleclass. And then in September, the next in the series of World Health Organization teleclasses on the World Health Organization campaign to eliminate unsafe therapeutic injections. I hope you'll be able to join some or all of those, if not live, perhaps by recording. Thank you all for joining us today. Jason, thank you again. It was a very interesting talk, and I'm really glad that we did this. Hopefully, we'll be able to do it again before too long. Thanks.
No,
as
I
well
was just saying thank you to everybody who came.
Very good. Thank you. Thanks to, as well to the patron sponsors that are listed on the last page, Virox Technologies and the World Health Organization. These organizations are good friends of Teleclass Education, and they help make it financially possible for this program to exist and to make the information available for free to people in developing nations. So thanks to them. To all of you and Jason, thank you all, and we'll talk again very soon.